Well, good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Can you all hear me okay? Okay. I was going to say it in Hebrew, but I don't think you'd catch it. Because it's easy to say good morning, which is Boker Tov. It's easy to say good evening, because that's Erev Tov. It's easy to say good night, Laila Tov. But for some reason, afternoon is in plural, and it's Tzaraim Tovim. And I thought, no, I'm not going to teach them that, because they'll never grasp it. But anyway, good afternoon. And today's talk's about Norwich City. I don't know if anybody's been there or lived there. I lived there about 20 miles from Norwich in the 1990s, just before I left to go to Israel. I left from Great Yarmouth, and I had family connections there. My mother went to live in Great Yarmouth. My dad's sister, my aunt, lived in Norwich. So I'd been across that part of the world a lot. It's the first time I left Northern Ireland was to Norwich, where I realized you didn't have to stand like this in a shop to get searched. That was a complete revelation to me during the Troubles. So, yes, Norwich is a very beautiful, interesting city, medieval city. And if you visit it, you can see some very wonderful parts and architecture, but it's got a rich history. What I discovered more so was it had a, not a rich Jewish history, maybe a sad Jewish history as well, as often tragically Jewish history is. And maybe people are learning more about this, and maybe it needs to be brought more to the light. But Norwich was really the first place where anti-Semitism began, certainly in the British Isles. And you hear of things like the blood libel, where Jews were accused, really, of killing people or children and using the blood and so forth to make Passover wafers or whatever the trumped-up charge might be. Well, of course, Jews don't eat blood. Even in the New Testament, it says not to eat blood. So they were really preposterous sort of accusations. But it didn't stop the people getting whipped up into a frenzy and persecuting the Jews. And this first happened in Norwich through a boy saint called William. William was only 12, and he got there was a sort of an entrapment where he was taken away from his mother. He was supposed to be working for doing leather work and stuff and furs and things. And of course, that kind of industry involved Jewish merchants who were always buying and selling and so forth. So the idea was the last time this little boy was seen was going into a Jewish house, and they said that, well, they never saw him alive again. So the story was that he was supposed to have been taken into the house and crucified. And his body his head was pierced with thorns, and until the blood came out. And there was never any proof of any of this, by the way, but I'm letting you know what one man has only wrote an account about it. His name was Thomas of Monmouth, and he was a monk of sorts, but was terribly biased against the Jews, and he wrote all this diatribe, really. But the Christians of Norwich really put a pogrom on the Jews, which was at Easter time then. They would attack the Jewish houses, Jewish persons, and the Jews had to shelter in Norwich Castle. Now, the Jews lived between the castle and Norwich Market. There was an area called the Jewry, and it wasn't a very well-to-do area, but they would have done commerce with the market and everything else. So you're going back to sort of 1134, this boy was supposed to have been killed and abducted. There are all sorts of tales about him. Some say they circumcised him. Some say he was crucified upside down. As tales go, tales get bigger and bigger. I know that myself. So eventually he was venerated in Norwich Cathedral in a shrine. And he has his own chapel. It's still there today. I visited it on my last visit. And because it's called Traveller's Tales, I'll share a little bit about my last visit there. So I was always wanted to see the Shrine of St. William, and I wasn't sure if it was still existing. And I'd read that the cult of St. William had been suppressed by the Vatican, so it was no longer a, he was no longer recognized as a saint because of, I suppose, the complaints from the Jewish community. But for quite a number, a few hundred years, people would have traveled to Norwich. It was a good money-making thing, pilgrimage in those days. People came to venerate saints and things, and they would have paid money not only to travel and lodgings, but for whatever paraphernalia that they would have, trinkets and candles and all sorts of things, would generate money. So sometimes the clergy would start a cult of some person or saint, really as a money-making exercise too. There was financial incentives there as well. But also the deep-seated anti-Semitism came out in all its force. So sadly, Norwich was one of the first recorded cities for the blood libel. And this continued on, of course, to other places. It happened in other places in Europe. Of course, the Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492. Then in Damascus in the 1890s, I think, there was a blood libel affair, which some of the CMJ missionaries from the Anglican Church intervened to try to stop. But Norwich was the first place this happened. And England holds the great prize for being the first country to expel the Jews en masse, which later happened in 1290 under Edward I. And of course, the Jews were lending money. The Christians were not allowed to buy and sell under the Christianity at that time was saying it was you weren't allowed to do usury, which was to lend money for a profit. And well, actually, all that comes from the Old Testament, where the Israelites were not supposed to do this to their fellow brethren. However, the only people then who could lend money would be Jewish people. They were generally quite, some of them, wealthy, because they traveled from other countries with things to sell, and they were astute businessmen. However, when you lend money, you become unpopular. And part of the reason some of the Jews were invited was literally so that the crown could build and prosper and build castles and palaces. And of course, maybe they didn't want to pay the money back. So a lot of the buildings that you know around England are built by Jewish money, though you may not realize it. Some of the money hasn't been paid back. Norwich Cathedral is an example. Places like Windsor Castle and, you know, Westminster Cathedral, all these places at Westminster Abbey. You hear of great places belong to royalty, castles, monuments, and cathedrals, ecclesiastical buildings, quite often borrowed money off the Jews, just as today you would from the banks. I suppose the Jews were the predecessors of the banks. And because Christians couldn't buy and sell, the Jews did the dirty work. Jews were not allowed to join the guilds, because Jews that had left Palestine were generally working in the fields and doing more agricultural work connected to the land. That all stopped when they went abroad. They were scattered across the world. They had to find how to make money in all these different countries where they were prohibited. The Christians wouldn't let them do this, wouldn't let them do that. So they found where they could. Mostly it ended up with money lending. And so their popularity was very slim. And of course, King Edward decided, I'm not going to pay my debts. Going to get rid of these people whom I owe money to. And the country was cleansed of all its Jews, and they fled to places like the Netherlands and Spain and Italy. So that's part of the sad history of England and the Jewish people there. But as I was walking around Norwich, it dawned on me, it's like a tale of two cities, because I'd lived in Yarmouth, Norwich, sort of in the 1990s, 30 years ago. And then I was coming back with all these memories of having lived there, where I didn't know all this history. This is before I went to Israel. Then I went to Israel, learned the history of the Jewish people, learned a whole lot more about my Bible and the Hebrew language, in fact, how to read the Bible. And then I came back to Norwich, Yarmouth, East Anglia, Norfolk, and discovered all this rich history that was on my doorstep when I lived there. But I didn't actually know it until later. And God sometimes allows those things to happen. So that's why I say it's like a tale of two cities, because when I lived there, it was in a completely different light. And then I come back with this, discovered a new knowledge about all these things. And it's funny, a lot of the places I would have frequented, and it wasn't in a good way, these places were right beside them. I said, this place has been here all along. I went into that shop, I went into this place, and there was this maybe old synagogue right beside it, or an old graveyard with Hebrew graves, which I wouldn't have been able to read back then. And going back, and I can sit and read the tombstone now. So it was quite a revelation that all this quiet history was just sitting on the doorstep. So I managed to visit the cathedral. I went into the abbey, not the abbey, the chapel. And it's now been made as a kind of chapel of the innocents, which is sort of commemorating the story in Bethlehem. But that's still a massacre of Jews, no matter what way you look at it. It was countless Jewish children killed by a despot. And they tried to make it now for world peace. You know, everything has to be politically correct, so they can't just sympathize with the Jews in this chapel that they don't know what to do with. It has to be like all children of the world and all sorts of things. But it is still the chapel of St. William, but I don't think they call it that anymore. But that was his shrine. People would have traveled far and wide to visit this little boy, William. And there was another one in Lincoln, I think, Hugh of Lincoln. And recently I discovered another one called Robert of Bury St. Edmund. So you had these child saints that caused a lot of sympathy, because when a child is murdered, it raises sentiments in people. And if it's murdered by a group of people who are not familiar with you, because you know them only through being non-Christians or having like an alien sort of outside feel to them, they're from another country, or they're known to have killed Jesus, you know, they're seen as this demonic sort of outcast people. So these little saints were serving a very terrible purpose. But there were other places that I visited going around the city. I just thought, Lord, where do you want me to go? And everywhere I ended up, you know, only if there's just enough time, as you know, when you're traveling, and I'll never get there, I just walked around the city, and I don't know how I joined all the dots, but I did, because I had all these things to do in one day. I was only over for 2 or 3 days with my aunt, who lives in St. Stephen's Street. And I said, I want to see this, and I want to see that, and I want to see this, and I want to see that. I said, a bit ambitious. And my aunt says, where are you going to today, Colin? I says, you don't want to know, because I don't know if I'll get there. But intrepid traveler as I am, and I was very tired, I walked around the whole city and got to all these places interconnected. There was old Jewish houses made into museums and places that have been kept since the 11th, 12th centuries. People who were merchants, and one man was one of the richest, you know, merchants in the city. And then there was the later Norwich history, where the Jews came in the 18th and 19th centuries and became good businessmen, and there was shoe factories and all built by Jewish people. But it's not a big Jewish community like in Ireland. You know, the Jews are a very small minority. But still, they made some impact there, but always with this terrible, terrible, attitude against them. Not just an attitude, actions against them. They were quite brutal. So then I took the train down 20 miles to Great Yarmouth, stopped off in Achill, which is where I worked at weekends at an old people's home, residential home. And I decided nobody would know me there now after 30 years. Certainly the old people weren't there that I knew. But anyway, there was one lady who remembered me. And I think I asked, was Jenny there? Oh, yes, she's still here. She's doing laundry. So she came out and said, oh, hello, little legs, she said, because she had this name for me when I worked there as a chef. So she still remembered that. But just nice to see friends again. You know, people remember you after such a long time. And got the train on to Yarmouth. And Yarmouth's an old place too, like Norwich. It's got old city walls, and it's a maritime town. My mother's husband, my stepfather, was a Coast Guard. That's why they moved there. But again, it was the same thing as Norwich, seeing all these Jewish places that I didn't know about. They have what's called the Old Rose. They're like very narrow lanes leading from the river to the sea. And they've been there for centuries, and they're called the Yarmouth Rose. So they're all numbered, just rather than named. Usually, like, you know. So I knew that the old synagogue was in row 42. So I'm counting along from the train station. Right, that's 27, 28, 29. Well, I got to 39, then there was a gap. And started again, like at something like 45 or something. I said, where's 42? So I tried from the other end, from the market, and worked down, and I'm going, right, 47, 45, and oh, back into the 30s again. So that bit was all blitzed during the war. So the synagogue isn't extant anymore. But I tried to find sort of, there was a sort of car park or something. That must have been where it was. There's not a big Jewish history in Yarmouth, but there was some court case I was reading about where a man, some young boy called Brady or something, he came up and he stole money off a Jewish man called Mr. Lewis. And it was taken to court, and of course, it was a bit biased against the Jewish man. First of all, he had to do an oath on the Bible. Well, he said, I can't swear on that Bible, it's New Testament in it. And he said, I want a Tanakh, the Old Testament. And they refused. They said they didn't have one. He said, look, it has the Tanakh in it. And that suits many hundreds and thousands of Jews all over England. And he said, not so, he said, not so, he said. He said, that's the way it is in London. He says, not a single one in London, he said. In other words, they're very obstinate and they won't swear in the New Testament. So this caused a whole furore in the Jewish Chronicle. In 1896, they had to write in and letters were passed, and eventually had to go to the top of the justice system, and it was passed then that the Jews were allowed to swear on the Old Testament, and Old Testaments had to be placed in all the courtrooms over that issue. But because he couldn't swear on anything at the time, no other book was given, the whole court case was thrown out. So it was quite unfair, you know. But I remember walking, seeing the hotel where I used to work and seeing the house where I used to live. People were very suspicious of me. I went into Gorleston, which is a town opposite the river of Yarmouth, and my mother lived there in the Coast Guard cottage, and Mum said, go and see the wee house, go and see the wee house. And I said, okay, Mum, take a photo. Let me see what it looks. So I went round to this Coast Guard cottage, and I'm clicking away like this. And this woman came out of those four houses in a row, and she says, what are you doing, taking photographs? And I said, come here. I went over to her, and she was very suspicious. And I said, my mum used to live in that house. She told me to take a photo. I'm only visiting. Oh, she says, because you never know nowadays. And right enough, people are suspicious. You know, who's this guy taking photos of a house? So yes, I went to Gorleston, Yarmouth, a place called Burr Castle. It's a little village where I worked a summer season, just doing the young chefing in a holiday park. And I liked the atmosphere. There's a swimming pool by the kitchen. And the boss used to say, put some onions on the grill. I said, why? He says, that'll whet their appetites. And right enough, fried onions wafting through the window and all, everybody's queuing up for food. But again, I lived there that summer period, went home, didn't actually know anything more about the history of the area, and yet there was a big Roman fortress there that I'd walked down to many a day, and a little old church. And last time I visited the church then, this time, and I found a whole history there about the Celtic missionary called St. Fersey, or St. Fersa in Gaelic. I said, are you trying to tell me he was an Irishman here? He says, yeah, he was what's known as the Apostle of East Anglia. He Christianized the whole of East Anglia and came from Connacht. And I'm quite interested in the Celtic Church and its roots, because they're quite similar to the sort of Messianic movement in their belief and system, and to the First Church. So there's me in this little village, discovering this guy had a big Christian community in this walls of this Roman fortress that had been allowed by the king at the time. So it just shows you, you never know what's under your nose when you're living in a place and you go to visit it again, you discover things. You know, I think God allows things to sink into you incrementally, you know. But it was a very interesting visit. And then I went back to Norwich after this nice closure for me, because having lived in these places, I was going back again as if to say, well, I'll never go back there to live, but I want to visit it one more time. And then I heard this story about Jewish skeletons being found in Norwich. And it was on the BBC, you may have heard of it. There was a shopping mall being built. And it happened to be on the street where my aunt lives. I mean, you couldn't make this up. But anyway, I was asking my aunt, where's this shop? And said, oh, it's just 2 minutes away. And we took a walk. Well, I'd done the whole city. And the last thing I wanted to do was to take a photo of this plaque where these, I wasn't sure if there was a plaque, but I was going to look for a plaque or something to show where these skeletons had been found. And I asked my aunt, did they monument this in any way? Is it recorded? Oh, I don't think so, she said. So I went online and looked up, and it showed a plaque. I said, I'm going to look for this plaque. I hope I find it. Well, it was getting sort of late, and you know, when you're with family, you can't insist on saying things because they want to get home for dinner, and I'm looking for a plaque. You know, the sympathy's not there. So, but anyway, we were starting talking, and I could see this plaque just behind my aunt. I said, hold on a minute. I have to take a photo. And there was the plaque, and it just commemorated the fact that these 17 skeletons were found down a well. And when they went to do the new complex of the mall, they found this well, and these skeletons were all on top of each other every way. And they said, this has been a brutal murder case. These people didn't die naturally because of the way they're situated and in this confined space. So they did DNA tests, and they all showed that they were from Orthodox Jewish Eastern European extraction. So it was really 17 Jewish people found there, anonymous people. 11 of them were children. But it just shows the kind of murder cases were going on in cities like Norwich, London, York, where they were bound up into the tower. They also escaped in Norwich Castle at one time when they were accused of coin clipping, which is where they used to cut the edges around the coins and keep the metal and make new coins or items out of them. And the Jews were blamed for coin clipping. And of course, every time there was one of these pogroms, they had to run and hide and into Norwich Castle. But the boy saint is definitely one of the most moving stories, because I think the damage that done, and the idea of this little boy saint. If you go to the churches around Norwich, they still have these wooden screens up in the churches, and you can see William being crucified and all. So it's part of the folklore, maybe now, of the region. But they haven't really done away with it. They've done away with the cult. It's been suppressed, as officially as they call it. But, you know, there are still traces of it there. But it's part of our history. You scratch it underneath the surface, you find a sort of an anti-Semitic root. So it's nothing to be proud of. You know, we have a rich British history. And I say the Jews have a sad history, but we also have a sad part of English history. That the first mass expulsion happened in England and the first blood libel happened in Norwich, you know. So that's it in a nutshell. I'll not make it too long because I don't want to know you all get tired. But it was a great visit. It was a very interesting visit. I was able to tick all the boxes. I was able to see all what I wanted to see. One more thing I did was visit a synagogue opposite Norwich Cathedral where the big entrance is. And there's a little alleyway called Tombland. And it's very ancient looking with half timber buildings. And that used to be a synagogue in the 1800s, so it's quite modern, but not that modern. And in that synagogue was a rabbi called Michael Solomon Alexander, and he became the first Anglican bishop to Jerusalem. He was ordained in Dublin. He came from Posen in Poland, I think. But anyway, he became a missionary for CMJ, the church's ministry among Jewish people, the Anglican Society that I worked for. And he's buried in Jerusalem. I've seen his grave. But I wanted to find out where his synagogue was. He was rabbi in Plymouth and Norwich. And it was the solicitor's office now. And I went in and I asked about it. They knew, didn't know what I was gibbering on about. And I said, the first Anglican bishop of, you know, Jerusalem was rabbi here. And I said, this is the actual building. And it's nicely painted up and all, modernized to an effect for a solicitor's office. She says, if you want to go into the basement and look around, you can. That's what I did. I went down. It was just all old, like it would have been, all old beams and all lying about. And you could just feel the antiquity of the place, you know. So that was quite special. And came back up, went across to Norwich Cathedral, and the lady wanted to help me in the door. Can I show you around? Can I tell you about Norwich Cathedral? I said, can I tell you something? I said, do you know the first Anglican bishop of Jerusalem? I was a rabbi just opposite your cathedral. Oh, I didn't know that, she said. So I said, maybe you can put that on part of your itinerary for information about Norwich Cathedral. So that little link as well just shows Norwich is an interesting place. But my aunt, when she first became a Christian, my cousin and the whole family came to faith. They were over in Northern Ireland for a short period. They were going to divorce and didn't. And they were directed by my pastor to go to a Pentecostal church in Norwich called Mount Zion at the time. And it is built on Mousehold Heath where this William of Norwich was killed. So actually, there's a whole connection there. So they were there last week praying over this place, sort of like in a, you know, conscious way. What is this significant about? You know, do we repent of this or what? But anyway, they such thought it was very significant that their church is on Mousehold Heath, and that is the place where this thing happened. So things don't happen by accident, but it's all food for thought. But I'll leave that with you. Is there anything anybody would like to ask or any pertinent question or thought?
The skeletons that were found?
They said they were about 800 years old. That's approximate, but yeah, that's about the time. The medieval time, yeah. But there's been pogroms intermittently, like. Yes.
Live in Norwich.
Yes.
And we used to live in Bungay.
As I know it.
Which is not that far from Norwich.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking with them about Alia.
Yeah.
Because certainly the Jewish community here in Europe and Britain, they're having to think seriously about their position, watching the political scene.
Yeah.
But no, it's fascinating. I didn't realize that the first Anglican bishop of Jerusalem had actually originated in Norwich. That's
great. He originated in Eastern Europe, but he was rabbi of Norwich. Yeah.
Right. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Colin.
And Shalom. Thank you.